This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been a pivotal week so far. That major port strike is underway. Iran attacks Israel in a ballistic missile strike. And the U.S. election is just about a month away. Plus, our guest today has a big warning for investors. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring on Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Hey, Jim, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
It's always great to join you, Andy.
We got a trio of big events hitting us this week. You got the port strike, which is now underway. You had this afternoon, Tuesday, the day we taped this podcast, Iran launched a ballistic missile attack on Israel, and of course, the backdrop of a U.S. presidential election just about a month away. So, nothing to see here, Jim, huh?
Well, there's only one thing that you missed, which is, I think, almost as important as some of the others, is that there's an employment report that comes out on Friday for the month of September, and the Federal Reserve and Jay Powell have really told us that at this point in time, and you know, he says they're kind of equal. But in reality, with inflation having come down so much and the unemployment rate ticking up, I think the Fed is paying a little bit more attention to what's going on in the labor market. So I think the jobs report this Friday, Andy, has the potential of being market moving.
That's the point I wanted to bring up. The stuff that I just mentioned, yes, big events, but not really historically market movers. The port strike thing is very temporary, and it could if it dragged out, but we've seen this stuff get fixed and then things go back to normal. This Middle East thing has been going on for a while and hasn't really seemed to impact markets at all. And sometimes I find that conflict actually leads to higher markets, as unfortunate as that may be. And then again, the presidential election, you know, in the short term could be, a little bit of volatility. But these really big, seemingly big events aren't the real movers. And then you spoke to what I was going to set you up with is the market. The real big thing that we should be focusing on is the jobs report. So do you agree with that? Some of these other things are noise. And as an investor, you know, you follow them as somebody who's interested in the news. But the real market mover is the jobs report, and a lot of this other stuff is noise. And we've even seen that in today's trade. Talk to
me. Yeah. I mean, again, the presidential election is going to be consequential, both for the result and then also how whatever party loses, how they react and respond. But it's like balls in the air.
The other thing with the election, too, like I want to just throw this in there, too, is a lot of times even Wall Street looks at maybe a mixed government. So, you know, there's a lot of ways this can slice, and there are consequences to elections and whatnot, but this market activity up into an election, you know, it's probably best for investors to kind of just stay their course.
Well, unfortunately, because we don't know the outcome of the election, we don't know the outcome of what's going on in the Middle East, you know, you kind of have to do what you just said, stay the course. The other thing that I would point out is the U.S. economy is in decent shape. It's doing better than what I would have expected at this point in time. GDP for the third quarter, according to the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now forecast, is at 3.1%, which is almost identical to what the second quarter was. So the economy continues to be okay. And I think one of the things that Powell, in his speech yesterday, as well as during his press conference after the last FOMC meeting, he emphasized that the economy is healthy. It's in a good place, I think is the frame he used. And so we have Wall Street expecting, going into that meeting, 250 basis points of cuts by the end of next year. The Fed, in terms of their dot plot and projections, penciled in 200 basis points of cuts. And yesterday, I think Powell again kind of said, folks, we did 50 because we thought it was appropriate in September. But what people have projected is no more 50 basis point cuts in the next two meetings, but 25 points instead. And again, the reason being the economy overall is in decent shape. And I think that's one of the hiccups for Wall Street, is that the market has been rallying based on the idea of a lot of rate cuts. They may not get as many. But the key thing, I think, Andy, is so far the economy is holding together. And one of the reasons that I don't hear many people mention, but it's important, is the U.S. government is running a deficit of 7% of GDP. So that when you think about that, we're getting 2.5 to 3% GDP growth, and it's being goosed and put on steroids by government spending. And the only time we've had a deficit this large was obviously in the pandemic year of 2020, and back in the 1940s during World War II. Even the deep recessions of 1982 and 73-74, deficits were less than 5%. So my point here is that the economy is doing okay, but it's dependent to a large extent on an enormous amount of government spending, which is, you know, kind of like we're doing emergency government spending at a time when we really don't need it. And I'm going to say one more thing, because the media never does this. And that is, you know, what we have been told was that when President Biden took office in January of 2021, that the economy was falling apart. And that is why the Democrats pushed through about $3 trillion worth of spending. And what no one ever, you know, rebuttals, if you will, is in the fourth quarter of 2020, GDP grew 3.2%. And in the first quarter of 2021, Andy, growth was 5.2%. So the point here is the story that was told back then to justify a lot of spending, no matter how good, quote unquote, good some people considered it, to justify it in terms of, oh, my God, the economy was falling apart. That's an outright lie, factually. So, again, the economy is doing good. That's a good thing. At the same time, we cannot continue to run deficits of 6 to 7%. And neither candidate has addressed this problem. And the government now has $35 trillion worth of outstanding debt. And it's going up about $1 trillion every 3 months.
I wonder if the price, the steadily rising price of gold is kind of a result of that exact thing. And what you're talking about now is big, big problems. So explain
it
if it's not taken care of.
Talking about it, Andy, the media never brings it up, really. They should during these debates. And it should be revealed that both parties have no plans to deal with it. And the reason is that if they cut back on government spending, what would happen to GDP growth? It would slow. And that's why neither party wants to mention it, and that they surely do not want to actually implement changes that would reduce government spending. And in order to really curtail the deficit, ultimately, you not only have to cut government spending, you're going to have to raise some taxes.
And and cutting spending, raising taxes is generally not a very popular thing, and often could put you at risk if you're running for election. And I think that kind of plays into it, which is dangerous as well. All right, Jim, we got to take a quick break. We'll talk about your big warning for investors on the other side of the spot. But hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back with Jim after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
Back with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at macrotides.com in San Diego. Well, Jim, you were talking about the setup, but you have a bigger warning for investors that you see coming in the not too distant future. And that's what I wanted to get into. And that's the potential of a secular bear market. Investment strategies that have worked for decades may no longer. And that's where I want you to kind of pick up, Jim. Tell us about this big warning you have for investors.
You know, again, we have to emphasize, Andy, is the stock market is like a pendulum. And you go through secular bear phases that can last decades. And, you know, overall, the economy is in good shape. You know, domestically, most people are really pretty happy. Standard of livings are increasing, and the market goes up for 2-3 decades continuously. Yeah, there's hiccups along the way, but it still keeps going up. Conversely, when the pendulum swings the other way, you enter a secular bear market. Inevitably, what happens at the end of the prior secular bull market is there are problems that were ignored that then have to be addressed. So in 1966 to 82, we, of course, had the Vietnam War. More importantly, we had inflation and the monetary policy that was needed to break a back of inflation ultimately caused the Dow and S&P broad averages to do nothing for 16 years from 1966 to 1982. And I have a piece called The Coming Secular Bear Market that goes through in detail what are some of the things that we're going to have to deal with over the next 10 to 20 years. And the two things I will point out, Andy, is that in prior decades, many decades, we used a combination of fiscal policy and monetary policy to soften recessions and then to reignite economic growth. Well, fiscal policy in the 1960s, $1 of debt generated 90 cents of GDP. It's now we have to use so much more debt, and it only is generating 30 cents of GDP. So the effectiveness of fiscal stimulus has lessened considerably in terms of monetary policy. For many, many decades, the funds rate always was a real funds rate, meaning that inflation, the CPI, was always below whatever the funds rate. So it had a positive rate. So what the Fed did during the 50s and 60s and 70s, Andy, was maintaining a real funds rate. All they did is, gee, we need the economy to slow. They increased the level of the real funds rate. Oh, we need the economy to revive because things have slowed. They lowered it. Well, from 2001 forward, the real funds rate was almost negative the whole time, the last 24 plus years. There was a brief period in 2018, and of course, over the last 18 months to 2 years, with the rate hikes that the Fed engineered, finally the funds rate got above the CPI. But what that implies to me, Andy, is that the most effective tool, which is the policy rate, the Fed funds rate, has kind of lost its juice. Coupled with once we had the financial crisis, the Fed pushing the funds rate to a negative real rate wasn't enough. They had to expand their balance sheet. They had to use quantitative easing. So again, to me, that's another sign and symptom that monetary policy, you know, just isn't as effective as it was for many decades. So if we have economic problems and we have to deal with budget deficits and outstanding debt, all of those things are going to be negative for GDP growth. And the two tools that have been used to, if you will, regulate economic growth, the fiscal policy, monetary policy, to me, look like they've lost their mojo. And those are two important, if you will, dynamics that I think support the idea that a secular bear market is coming. Historically, it'll last 10 to 15 years. The stock market will struggle significantly. And for most investors who've enjoyed, for the most part, secular bull markets over the last 40 years, buy and hold has worked fabulously. It didn't work so well between 2000 and 2010, but then things recovered because the Fed stepped on the gas, you know.
Right. It eventually did pan out pretty well. I mean, if you bought and hold, unless you were, you know, had to get into cash in a quick hurry.
Right. Right.
How do people know, what are the signs that we're going to see that this is going to come to fruition?
Well, I think the signs are already there. I mean, we've got wars going on in multiple places around the world. It doesn't look like they're going to, you know, that's going to change in a meaningful way. We've been in an economic war with China for a number of years. That's not going to change anytime soon, no matter who gets elected. Plus, we have, as we talked earlier, we've talked in the past about, you know, government deficits, government outstanding debt at $35 trillion. You just can't keep running 6-7% annual deficits, even when the economy is growing at 3%. So there's plus income inequality, a huge problem. Wealth inequality, big problem. So there's society problems, Andy, that are have built up. And the other thing I'll mention is, in the past, if we faced a crisis like 9/11. Now, less than 3,000 people died. It brought this whole country together. The pandemic, more than 1 million people died. It drove us apart. So those are the kind of symptoms that are right there in front of us, that for whatever reason, the society mood has changed very significantly from where it was 20-some years ago after 9/11. And we're in a very different place. And the challenges that we face and the divisiveness is going to make it that much more difficult to make real progress. All that will take a lot of time, and I think ultimately it equates to slower economic growth. I think there will be more negative sentiment and mood in the country. I mean, look at the negativity, and we're growing at 3%. Can we imagine if the economy only averages 1% or 1.5% for a decade? So those are all the reasons why I think the evidence is in front of us. What will happen is there'll be a trigger of some type, and that will probably be the next recession, whenever it kicks in, that'll, you know, in a sense, amp all these problems to the next level. My take is it'll happen before the end of next year.
Wow. So this is coming fast. And so final takeaway for the Gaines listener, we covered a lot of territory today, and now you've hit us with this kind of fundamental change. So what's the final takeaway here?
Well, you got to be prepared. In other words, the strategy that people have been used to and have been taught to adopt, buy and hold, is going to struggle mightily if what I'm talking about comes to pass. The point I would make is it came to pass between 1966 and 82. It came to pass between 1929 and 54. It wasn't until 1954 that the Dow got back to where it was in 1929. There was another period from 1906, I think, to 1920. So these secular bear markets, Andy, back in the 1870s, same thing. There was a depression in 1873 and 1893. So my point is, people forget. They don't know history all that well. And they only, so the point being is the approach that people have been using, buy and hold, is not going to perform really well. One has to learn how to be more tactical or work with people that know how to do that. And that, I'm not talking about the whole portfolio, but most people right now, Andy, have almost 0% of their portfolio allocated to a tactical approach. So, you know, I just think that, you know, most people are going to ignore this information. I understand, because for the most part, buy and hold has served people well. But I think we're on the cusp of some very significant changes. And at a minimum, I would hope that your listeners, get motivated enough to try to learn more about whether or not this consequence is a real potential.
All right, big thanks to Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gaines episode drops. We drop Gaines episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.